the 50th mitzvah, apparently. Mitzvahs bezdin larog besayef hamechuyev. Shenitztavinu laharog haover maktsas mitzvahs hatorah besayef. That we were commanded to administer the death penalty for certain sinners in the Torah with the sword. Hereg. This halacha is called in rabbinic literature hereg, which means simply death. So I guess the standard form of death in their worldview was death by the sword that occurs, I guess, during all types of wars. And in general, when one person wants to kill another person, that's done with a sword and not through any of the more complicated other death penalties that we've discussed. Yeah.
Why does he refer to sword as saif and then cheret?
That is a very good question. I'm not actually sure. I assume that saif sounds more elegant. Laharog becheriv, to kill by the sword, seems like something you do, like I said, sort of in a war. It's talking about beheading, yes. Laharog becheriv is just clean beheading. Maybe, would you be yotzi with a guillotine? I don't know.
I mean, accomplishes the same goal. Like, yeah. This was supposed to be humane when it was invented. That
it makes sense. It's very fast, right? Very quick death.
Unless the person has to be actually wielding the blade. Guillotine won't work.
Right. Right, but the question is that really one of the halachos? I'm not sure. It's a good question.
It's actually beheading?
Yeah.
So you can't use a gun?
No, you can't. No, it has to be by the sword. But saif.
Nobody like updates these? Like modern.
No, I mean, with the death penalty in Jewish law hasn't been administered since the close to the turn of the common era. What?
When Mashiach comes.
Probably not, but I don't know.
Really?
I don't know. But then there'll probably be fewer people who violate these mitzvahs. But we don't need to think about that right now. I think that falls under the category of what the Rambam is not talking about this exactly, but the Rambam says that we're not exactly sure what the sequence of events is going to be when Mashiach comes, and what's going to come first and what's going to come after. But he says this is not what religion is all about in Judaism. That shouldn't be what you're thinking about in your day-to-day life. You just don't think about these things too much. It happens when it happens, and that'll be it. The Himisa Kala. It is a very light and not-so-severe method of putting someone to death. But strangulation is even less severe than hereg, which is, as we pointed out last time, it seems a little bit counterintuitive. One would think that clean slicing off of one's head is an instant death, and strangulation is worse. So that's a little bit hard to understand. There is a Tana who does reverse the order. There is a difference of opinion amongst the Tanoim, who says that instead of skila, sreifa, hereg, v'chenek, he says that the order of the death penalties is sreifa, skila, chenek, v'hereg. So according to that Tana, hereg really is the least severe. But that's not how we baskin, which is, again, we'll have to work on exactly how to understand that. Dechad min hamumasim b'misa zo ha'amake avdo afilu kanani. One of the people who is put to death using the method of hereg, of beheading, is someone who kills another person, and that person is not even a free man or woman. That person could even be, if you own a quasi-non-Jewish slave, called an Eved Kanani, because we know that an Eved Kanani does have some of the halakhos of a Jew, that he has to... Right, an Eved Kanani basically has the same halakhos as that to observe as a woman, exempt from positive time-bound commandments. So even if you kill your own slave, you are subject to the death penalty of hereg. Because as we'll see in a second, you might think, since you own the slave, you could do whatever you want. So if you kill him, it doesn't matter. But that's not the way the Torah views it. You have to kill the slave, and it dies from that wound immediately. As we'll see in a second, what that means. Shenemar nakom yinakem, the slave shall be avenged. Uvaha perush she yehareg makehu b'sayif. The accepted reading of this pasuk is that the person who kills the slave is just to be put to death by the sword.
Who's this parish?
That's the received tradition. It's not from Moshe Rabbeinu passed down throughout all the generations. Kvar kasafti lamala sheharamban zichrono livracha lo yimne arba misos bezdin la arba mitzvos kemo harambam zichrono livracha. The Ramban does not count the four different types of putting to death as four different mitzvahs. He just considers it all details in the general mitzvah of that the Beis Din is supposed to treat the sinner as according to the punishment that's prescribed in the Torah. Mishor shei mitzvah zo, some of the reasoning of this mitzvah is shirotzo hakel lakor mitochu maso hakedosha roa haleva achzarios, that God wanted to uproot from his nation, his holy nation, bad heartedness and cruelty. Hagidola, that great cruelty. Al kein tzivsa shekol mi sheyigbar alav kas gadol. So the Torah commands that a person who is overcome with a very great level of anger, kol kach sheyake hakas maves avdo sheu beveso vein lamoshia, to the extent that there's this poor defenseless slave. A slave doesn't have kinsmen to watch out for him. He's totally in your house and totally under your watch, and you normally do with the slave whatever you want. Sheyumas hosazeh. So a person who does something, who gets so angry at the slave, the defenseless slave who has no one to look out for him, that you should be put to death. Same as if you killed a free person. Afal pi sho'eved kinyan kaspo ve'ibed es mamono b'mo. So even though you really shy yourself in the foot, so to speak, when you killed your slave because you lost property. Now you have to go out and buy a new slave if you want the same level of work to be done. Aval pichein yehorig. There's still the owner should be put to death, even though you'd think maybe the Torah would have a more lenient punishment because he harmed himself when he killed his slave. Almost as much, not almost, but similar to how he harmed the slave. He harmed himself, just in a lesser way, but it wasn't just a crime against the slave. Achar shehigbir kaso al nafsho kol kach, since you allowed your anger to get the better of you. V'din roi v'chasherhu. Again, God gets sefer mitzvahs, sefer achinach saskama. Mishpate Hashem tzadku yachtov. That the laws of God are very righteous. So again, you see the idea that that anger, that uncontrollable anger is one of the most unforgivable things that the Torah says. We have, of course, the Gemara that tells us, Kol ha-koes kilo v'davodah zarah, if you let your anger get the better of you, it's as if you worshipped Avodah Zarah, which, of course, is a punishment that it is also punishable by the death penalty. What? Okay. But we see that, in other words, so for basically the Gemara's logic is that once your anger starts getting the better of you, you're going to lose control and you're going to not be able to control yourself from doing the mitzvos. So you're going to violate all the mitzvos if your anger gets the better of you. It shows that the whole point of the Torah is to be in control of yourself and the self-discipline, and uncontrollable anger is totally the opposite of that. So somebody who displays such uncontrollable anger that he kills someone, kills his slave even, he's better off not being around. The Jewish people is better off without him. Dinei ha-mitzvah, the halachos of the mitzvah, kigon din yom o yomayim, the halacha of one day or two. So this halacha is a specific halacha by one's own Eved Kenani, quasi non-Jewish slave, that if the slave does not die from the wound directly, immediately, then, and he hangs around, he's sick for a couple days from the wound, and then he dies, then you're exempt from the death penalty. It's not, again, just because you're exempt from the penalty doesn't make it a good idea to go ahead and do it. So for a technical reason, you are exempt from the death penalty if he hangs around. But if you kill someone else's slave or you kill any other person and you hit him or her and the person is lying sick for days or weeks or months, but at the end it's clear that the person died from the wound that you inflicted, then you do receive the death penalty.
Who pays the doctor bills?
The doctor bills?
Well,
if he dies, there's no doctor bills.
But it's a day, so you got to give medical care.
If he doesn't die. If he dies, then you get the death penalty. Well, if he doesn't die, then you have to pay. V'yeser prateha, mivorim b'vavakama. This is all explained in Tractate Bavakama. V'ha'over aleha v'lo asabodin, im yishkoch b'yodo b'italase. If you are the Bezdin and this person is brought in front of you and there's proper testimony and everything, then you violated a positive commandment if you don't perform the penalty that's prescribed by the Torah. In this case, the penalty of death by the sword. Ve'onsho gadol, his punishment is very great. Shigorim takolos livnei adam. So if such a person is left around, who's totally not in control of his anger, that he's going around killing people, even his own slave, who's, you know, it's one thing if you kill someone else that you're just really mad at, and if his presence would really just make your life better in your own mind, but it's another thing if you kill you're so out of control that you do something that's even harmful to yourself just because your anger makes you think illogically. The next mitzvah is mitzvahs bezdin lodun benizke behema. The mitzvah of the bezdin to judge according to the laws of animal damages. So lodun bedin shor. That's the right. That's the next mitzvah in everyone's editions, yeah. Right? Okay. Lodun bedin shor hamazik bein shehizik adam kemoshe kasu baparsha v'chi yigach. So, to judge according to the halacha of an ox that causes damage, bein shehizik adam kemo shekasu, whether it damages a person, as it's written in the parsha, that's just the way it's written in the parsha, v'chi yigach, if an ox gores, bein shehizik mamon kemo shekasu v'parsha v'chi yigof, and that's the other example given in the parsha, v'chi yigof, if it pushes or something. V'ikar perusho shel yigof yidchof. So, yigof is from the shorish nun gimel pei, as I'm sure you know with your biblical grammar class.
Nun gimel pei.
Yigof. Then that means push. Umihu bein sheiziko begufo o beraglov o nashach beshinov. So whether the ox damaged the person in his with its body or with its legs, o nashach beshinov, or whether it bit with its teeth. Well, I feel he's a bekarnav kulan bichlal loshon negifa mashma, that these are all included with the language of nun gimel pei. There you see the shorish right there, negifa, of pushing. Aval negicha lo mashma bekaren. But an ox gores, the definition of an ox goring is with its horns. Uchvar nisrabo nizke shor ba'adam midichsi b'parshas ki yigach v'heimis demashma v'heimis mikol makom bein negifa bein bingicha bein b'shar dvarim. If an animal, again, damages a person, meaning it doesn't matter, since it says, if it would just say, ki yigach, to the point of death or something like that, that would mean that it specifically had to gore to the point of death. But since it says, ki yigach vehemis, that it says when the ox pushes or whatever, and it causes death, so that means that the main point, it's what we call in the methods that the Torah is interpreted, it's called a pratuchlal, meaning that first the Torah says something specific, then it says something more general, so that means that the prat is just there for kicks, and the main point is the klal, that the main point is that the axe killed, and it doesn't really matter if it was done by negicha or by negifa. No matter how the ox killed the person, it's subject to the same penalty. Which, of course, is that you kill the shor, as we're going to get to in the next mitzvah.
You're only talking exclusively about ox.
No, we'll get to that in a second. The lav davka shor, in fact, is the very next sentence. Not specifically an ox. Elo afilu kol behema v'chaya v'hof. Yeah, any... It could be either a domesticated animal or a wild animal or a bird. Sheiziku chayoven. They're also obligated in to pay. Ela shadiber hakazu baragil. Normally, the type of animal that causes damage is an ox, so therefore the Torah used that as an example. Kvar amarnu shekol mihamitzos habos lanu al yidei al dover hamishpat shoresh echelan. So, and we already pointed out, we don't have to tell you each time specifically what the reasoning for each mitzvah is. That all the mitzvahs that talk about damages all have the same reason. V'davar muskalhu, it's a very understandable thing. I don't need to repeat myself in every single mitzvah that this is for, to make sure that society functions properly, and if God didn't give us this mitzvah, we wouldn't know how to function in society. Dinei ha-mitzvah, the halachos of the mitzvah are as follows. Kigon, ezehu ha-muad, ve-hatam, ve-achiluk she-beinehem. So the halachos of the mitzvah include what's called a shor mu'ad, that's something it's expected to do, an animal is expected to do, and what's called a shor tam, what's called how do you say this in English?
Ordinary,
like tame, that's tame. Mm-hmm. A tame animal, and the tame animal really is just that it's not expected to do something out of the ordinary. Udvarim shehabehema mu'edes bohen batchila, and what is an animal considered to do normally? V'she'ena mu'edes lehen ad sheniro samur geles bohen, and what is it not expected to do until you see that it does these things? So an animal, for example, is expected to eat things that it normally eats, and it's expected to walk in the public domain. And these are things that if the animal damages while it's performing one of these actions, that's called a shor muad. But if it gores something, that's unusual. The animal doesn't normally do that. So therefore, it's considered out of the ordinary. It's considered less imperative on the owner of the animal to guard it against doing damage from these items. In other words, it has to pay less of a damage, has to pay less money if it does something while it's a tam than if it's a mu'ad, because if it's a mu'ad, then the owner should be expecting it to do it. What things are normally considered to be doing from the beginning, but there are certain things that it could become a mu'ad. So for example, if you see for 3 days straight that this ox does like goring things. So there are halachos about exactly how you bring the testimony against the ox that it becomes a mu'ad. But if you see that the animal doing out of the ordinary things for 3 days straight, then this animal becomes a mu'ad. It becomes expected to do this, and therefore that they will have to pay more damages for doing one of these activities. And again, how do we determine whether it's become a mu'ad or not? That certain types of testimony has to be in the Bezdin. Again, what type of testimony the Edom have to offer to show that it stopped being expected to do these types of things. Again, the specific things it can be expected to do can have lots of details to them. So, for example, it could be that this ox only likes to gore donkeys and not camels, so therefore it could be become mu'ad for camels and not for donkeys. When there's an expression that if it's mu'ad l'shor l'chamur l'gamel mu'ad l'kol, if it shows that it likes to gore donkeys and other oxen and camels, then it becomes expected to gore any animal. And this is an expression. V'chamisha mine chayos hamu'ados mitchiloson. And there are five animals that are considered mu'ad for everything from the beginning. Even if they engage in society and they interact normally for all their lives, and all of a sudden at some point in the animal's life, it does something that would normally for other animals be expected to be out of the ordinarily, still it's considered mu'ad. It should be expected to do that, even if it's used to people and normally behaves very well. And those five animals are hazev, wolf, the ha'ari, lion, even if they're trained in the circus to be with people all the time and nuzzle up against them and not eat them, and still they're considered to be mu'ad for whatever damage they do. V'hadov, and a bear, v'hanamer, and a leopard, v'habardalas, some other type of big cat, panther. V'afilu hen b'nei tarbos, right? So even if they're called b'nei tarbos, even if they're cultured animals, they know what they're doing, still they're considered mu'ad for any damage they might have caused. V'chiluk ha-reshuya shetazik b'sochan, and they are considered to be, in other words, if it's walking in the public domain, so it's considered There's one type that there could be a certain damage that I could inflict there that it wouldn't be considered to be such a, it wouldn't be given the same penalty if it did that in a private domain. And certainly, if you take your animal into the other animal's domain and the animal causes damage on it, so the owner of the animal can say, well, why'd you bring your animal close to mine? It's not my fault. If you hadn't come in, then you wouldn't have gotten the damage inflicted on you. And that's legitimate. That's what the Torah says. Then in that case, the owner of the animal does not have to pay. I'm not used to this edition. Manikra avos benezikin, manikra toldos. So what's considered, there are four major categories of damages, hashor, v'habor, v'amavia, v'hever, that we're going to talk about. There's the ox damage and the digging a hole. We're going to discuss, and other ones, but we'll get there, and there's a fire, and we'll get to those in their proper mitzvos, but those are the general categories. And v'achiluk shebeineyam ba'achas, and what's the difference between the two? So there could be, if there is basically, there are derivations, so if there is the animal using different parts of its body to inflict damage, but let's say the animal, basically if the animal is found to have one category applicable to it, then lower categories are automatically included, but if it's found to have a lower category included, then the upper categories are not, the more general categories are not automatically included. V'dinei ha'shmiros sh'adam chayav l'shomrim k'dei sh'lo yaziku, how far one has to go to protect one's animals from damage. V'cheitzad yischayav u'yipater bohen, and exactly what are the details about how you are obligated to pay for the damage caused by your animal. Again, tons of details. V'yesa rubei pratei, the Sefer Chinuch says rubei pratei when they're really a lot. Mivarim b'shisha prakim arishonim b'avakama. Not so much. It's only six full of the longest chapters in Gemara that discuss all the details of these halachos. Can't distill it into such a short shir. V'eile hadinim anikroim dinei knosis. These halachos are called the halachos of fines. As we discussed last time, what the parameters of the laws of fines are. Kvar amarnu she'ein donen oson el bezdin asmuchen uveretz Yisrael. That in order to judge the laws governing fines, you have to have real smicha. Not like we celebrated today in the Chag HaSmicha, but the real smicha from the tradition going back to Moshe Rabbeinu, generation after generation. And that smicha no longer exists. That ended sometime in the first few centuries of the Common Era.
I thought a knas was actually like an extra penalty beyond damages owed, you know, to compensate the owner of the you know, an object.
Sometimes, yeah, like for a gneva, yeah.
Yeah.
But these particular, all the chiluke dinim governing these damages, of course the Bezdin in all times and places has to come up with a legitimate system that it has to talk about, you know, if you damage them. But the exact halachos as laid down in the Torah for this, what pays chatzi nezek, what pays half tam.
So tashlumin, so knas means tashlumin then, as well.
Yeah, this particular category of tashlumin. Not if if I take someone's phone and smash it on the floor, that's a straight tashlumin. Mm-hmm. But these, all the halachos of the Torah governing these things, like for that atam, if it's not expected to cause damage, then you pay only half the damage that it caused. And even that, you only have to pay by selling the animal that caused the damage. You don't have to take from any of your other assets in order to cover the damage. But if it's a muad, if it's expected to cause the damage, then you pay the full damage that it caused from your best property.
It is, yes.
But here we go. It is v'amazik chayv l'shalom b'dinei shamayim b'chol makom. But still, even if the Bezdin can't technically force you to pay, according to what the Torah demands, in order to be yotze with God, so to speak, you still have to pay. And again, we discussed last time that if the person who's owed the money goes and grabs it from the person who owes him, then the Bezdin allows him to keep it. But the Bezdin cannot paskin, no longer has the power to paskin the exact halacha as described in the Torah. But again, most of the Bezdin's job is to make sure society functions properly so it can institute its own rules and judge as it sees fit in every time and place, and to make sure that people don't damage the property of another. Oh, there we go. And if the damaged person grabs it, then then you don't take it out. Take it back from him. But the question is also if he took too much. So how could you? Does the bezin have the authority to say no? Give some of it back, but not all of it, because they're already starting to get involved in exactly how much he owes. Or if he asks the bezin how much he's allowed to take, is the bezin allowed to tell him how much he's allowed to take? There are big disagreements governing this. The next mitzvah in your editions, which I'm going to have to flip a little bit to find in mine. Yeah. Shelo lech or shor haniskal. Not to eat the stoned ox, which is, of course, an animal that killed a person, is subject to the halacha of shor haniskal. And what's the obvious question you're going to ask me? If it's stoned, it's not shechted. Mm-hmm. So why does the Torah have to tell us not to eat the flesh of the shor haniskal? So we're going to find out in a second. Shelo nochal besar shor haniskal, we shouldn't eat the flesh of the shor haniskal, afilu nishchat karoi, even if instead of stoning it, somebody went ahead and shechted it. Mikevan shenigmar dino besar asur. As soon as the Bezdin paskins that this shor is supposed to be stoned, the flesh becomes forbidden. V'chein meforesh b'mechilta, that's what the Mechilta says. Shenemar v'lo yachel es besaro, it's flesh and not be'in, v'lav davka shor, not specifically shor, elo afkol amazikin behema chayevof, any animal that's supposed to be stoned because it killed a person, el shediber baragil, that the Torah says that it's an ox, because an ox is the most common animal to inflict damage.
You stone an ox.
Watch out for that line. Mishor sheha mitzvah. Mishor sheha mitzvah kedei lahaskim b'datenu shekol mi sheba takol al yodo meruchak v'nimas im elokim ven iman Hashem. That the reasoning for this mitzvah is to emphasize in our minds that anything that caused a michshol, something, a stumbling block, is completely disgusting for people and for God. Afilu shogeg kimo behema she'en lo das, even an animal that didn't do it on purpose, it's not a murderer. It's just that since such a terrible thing happened with this animal, we have no choice but to kill it. The kol shekhen b'mezid, so somebody, a person who kills another person on purpose, is disgusting, and people shouldn't be deal with it at all. Uvetitenu datenu al davar zeh, yevienu lihizor harbe b'chol ma'asenu al shelo teitzei takol mitachas yodenu l'olam. And when we put our minds to this, we should have in mind that nothing improper should ever, we shouldn't be involved in anything improper ever. We should be very careful that nothing improper should ever come as a result of our actions. So even to do it accidentally, nothing should look wrong, nothing should seem off about anything we do. Midine ha-mitzvah. This also, by the way, is important for a sofer, that is a you know, it always says, so far has to make sure not to bring a takala. That even you have to be extremely careful when you do your work, because if you make the slightest slip-ups, you could make a puzzle tefillin or mezuzah or sefer Torah. So have to make sure not to maybe extra careful that nothing improper should happen as a result of your actions, even not on purpose. Of course, it applies to anyone. That's just an example. Midini ha-mitzvah, the halachos of the mitzvah, ma sheberu zichronam livracha, shebein tam uvein muad niskal, whether it's a tamox or it's expected to behave improperly, it gets the penalty punishment of stoning. Al kol birya shememis, it kills any type of person, bein isho isho katano eved, a man or woman or a minor or a slave, any human being.
Another behemoth
doesn't get skila, it just gets the, it has to, yeah, just has to pay the damage. B'shein gomer m'dino ela b'fnei ba'alav imi'esh l'ba'alam, if it has an owner, the owner has to be present while his animal is being sentenced. I think this is a normal thing, and even in American law, if a dog, you know, bites a person, and don't they put the animal down?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a pretty normal.
To. I mean,
right. Don't, oh, really? Yeah. Pretty normal law in all societies, as far as I know. There are lots of technicalities in the halacha of shor haniskal that sometimes it does not receive the penalty of skila, even if it does cause someone to die. For example, if its owner, the Torah says that gam be'olav yumas, that the owner of the animal that allowed his animal to kill a person, didn't watch it should also be put to death. But that doesn't mean that you literally put the owner to death. It should, the owner should take it as if he's supposed to be put to death and has to pay a certain monetary penalty. So if that's the case, so you have still look at it as if the owner was to be killed with the shore. So for example, if the owner is on his deathbed, so then he's considered, or he's what technically would be considered, called a trefa, like an animal has a physical defect that's for sure going to lead to its death. So since the owner is already sort of half dead, so it can't, it's not a full person to be killed, then the animal does not receive the penalty of skila either. But again, it's a...
Shimra, right?
What? It's a shimra. Not a shimra. Shimra is different from a trefa. A trefa means you have a physical defect that's for sure going to lead to your death.
Is a shimra
is someone who's actually on his deathbed.
Well, said
a trefa could be prancing around in the fields. For all it just has a defect that's going to lead inevitably to the death. The Yeser Pratel, all the details are explained with Armukama in Tractate Bavakama. Vinoheges mitzvas isur besaro bischarmu vinikevos. Neither men nor women are permitted to eat the flesh. Uveretz Yisrael davka noeg din sharaniskal pismuchen. Uvezdin shel esrim ushlosha. That it's in Eretz Yisrael specifically that we have the halacha of sharaniskal and has to be judged by people who have real smicha. The over alea v'achal kezayis mi besaro b'mezid loka. And if you violate this mitzvah and you eat a kezayis of the flesh of the sharaniskal on purpose, then you receive the penalty of lashes, which is the normal penalty for violating a negative commandment. But anyway, fine. So the next mitzvah is very similar to the mitzvah we just recently discussed, which is mitzvahs bezdin ladun benizke habor. That just as we had, again, we had a shor v'habor v'amave v'hever, the four avos nizikin. So one was the shor, which we just discussed. Now we're going to discuss the bor, which is what happens if you dig a hole in a place where you're not supposed to dig a hole.
Or cover a hole that's there. Right?
Okay, we'll get there. You're getting ahead of us in the Sefer HaChinuch. Let him talk. Good. So the problem is, I didn't go to a regular yeshiva high school where they normally focus on Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, Bava Basra. So I'm sort of catching up now. I was always more interested in. I was always more interested in Orach Chaim Yoredea type of topics. As we said, they said in the Chagas Smicha this morning that one time that the congregants discovered the rabbi, some in America 50 years ago, whatever, they discovered the rabbi learning, and they fired him because they said, what is it? We hired a rabbi. We expect that in school. He learned everything already that he needs to know.
Really?
Fine. So, Lodun Bedine Aposeach Bor B'makom Shu Kishalun Livnei Adam. So, we should judge according to the halachos of someone who opens or digs a hole in a place where it is a stumbling block before people, or could cause them to falter. Shneamar v'chi yiftach ish bor v'gomer. The pasuk starts if a man opens a pit. K'mo shiksiva parsha, as is written in the parsha. V'lav davke bor el afilu asiyach umayra. That it doesn't have to be specifically a pit with the normal dimensions, a hole that's sort of square or circular and goes down far. It could be even if you dig sort of, if there's a hillside or something, and you dig in, like make a cave or a ditch. It doesn't have to be a pit per se. The reason that the Torah chooses to use the Lashon of Bor is because the Lashon of Bor tells you that it has to be 10 tfachim deep. So 10 tfachim deep is about a meter. So the assumption is that a hole that's less than a meter deep is insufficient to kill someone if he falls in. It's a little arbitrary, but that's the way it is. Shor shekvar nichta, we already discussed the reason for it. Dineha, the halachos are as follows. Kigon mash amru shor velo adam, chamor velo kelim. So it talks about an ox or a donkey falling in. So the halacha is only subject if the damage is only shayach if an ox or a donkey, some animal, falls in it, and not a person or vessels. If somebody drops their vessel into a hole that you dug, then you are exempt. So chofer bor birshuso v'hifke rishuso v'lo boro shechayev. So let's say you dug a hole on your property, and then you declared your property to be ownerless. but you maintain possession of the hole. So now it becomes Rishus Arabim, the area around the hole, but the hole remains in your property. Shechayev, that he is still liable for damages caused by his pit. But it's interesting here, the Sefer Chinuch tells you the answers. Usually you have to go look it up yourself. It says, the halachos are this, are involve this and this and this and this, but it doesn't tell you what the answers are. That's the main work that I have been preparing for this year, to figure out everything the Sefer Chinuch is talking about. But here he makes it easy. Somewhat. Hifgir boro gamkein patar lefisha birshuso chafar. But if you declared both the entire property and the pit inside of it ownerless, then you're exempt because when you originally dug the pit, that was fine, as opposed to, because it was on your property, as opposed to if you dug a pit in the Rishus Harabim, in the public domain, because there you weren't supposed to dig the pit, so you're still obligated to pay any damages caused by it, even though it's not technically yours. That's like, we have this expression, the Gemara says, there are two things that the Torah considers as if you own it, even though you don't really own it. One is that if you dig a pit in the public domain, you don't own it, but you still own it in the eyes of the Torah to the extent that you have to pay damages, somebody is damaged by it. And the other thing is chametz on Pesach. Chametz on Pesach, since the Torah declares it to be forbidden to derive any benefit from it, so you don't technically own it. But if you have it in your possession, the Torah considers it as if it's in your possession to violate the mitzvah. Right, it's talking about chametz that you didn't declare null.
So I'm saying, you're making it hefker now.
But that's before the time that it becomes usser. It's only at the time that it becomes usser that you no longer technically.
Before you can get away with it once. It's,
right, that's the whole halacha. You can only do bitul chametz or mechiras chametz or anything if it's before the time where it becomes usser, because then you have rights over it. Mm-hmm. Once you no longer have rights over it, then it's meaningless to say that you declare it null and void. Mm-hmm. And ownerless.
Then it's too late.
You have to physically destroy it. The only way to avoid violating the prohibition any longer is to physically destroy it.
Like if you find it during Chol HaMoed.
Right, if you find chametz during Chol HaMoed, then you have to destroy it immediately.
Right. With a
that's not Chol HaMoed, that's on Yom Tov. Okay. You find it on Yom Tov and you can't destroy it because you're only allowed to burn stuff on Yom Tov that's for actually constructive purposes that you actually derive benefit from. Then you're not allowed to burn it on Yom Tov, but you just cover it with a vessel to show your intention that you want to burn it and nobody will come to use it, and then you burn it on Chol HaMoed.
That's right. You can't simply put it in your fireplace because then you're getting benefit from it.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But what about flushing it down the toilet in this new version of...
Right. So that is, according to most poskim, if you find chametz on Yom Tov, then you can flush it down the toilet. Now, because that's no problem. Yeah. However, and why do they say, I don't know if they've even heard of this in other places, that Rav Soloveitchik had some shtickle Torah, that he concocted a shita, that he said that no, it doesn't mean that, oh, just you have to cover it with kli because you can't burn it. But if you could dispose of it another way, so good. He said that's not what it means. It means you have to cover with a kli and not burn it because there is an isser, there's a prohibition to destroy chametz on Yom Tov. That the act is such a significant action of destroying this chametz that it's usser midrabanan, I guess, to do it on Yom Tov or Shabbos. That's why when it was, this is very scary to our ears, but Rav Soloveitchik, when it was Erev Pesach on Shabbos, and he would finish his morning meal, and he had some, you know, bits of rolls left over, he would do like the Dina de Gemara. He would just cover it with a kli, and he would leave it there until Chol HaMoed, until he could burn it.
That's so strange.
So most of our, you know, balabastas would freak out at this. But that's what he did. Most people, when they tzara Pesach on Shabbos, when they have anything left over from the meals, they flush it down the toilet. Or they stuff themselves and they try to make sure to finish every crumb. Ein lach bir chametz gadol mizeh, right? Tabal amor. That's the best way to do bir chametz is by eating it. That only works before, obviously. So when you dig the the pit in Rishus HaRabim in the public domain, then you would, it's forbidden to do so from the outset. So it doesn't help whether you own it or not and are mafker it. So you could say, you could dig the pit and say, no, I declare this ownerless. Well, it doesn't matter. You didn't own it in the first place. If you dig it in the public domain, you are always obligated to pay for any damages. If you dig a pit in your domain, in your property, if it's mamish right next to the public domain, and you did not declare the bor ownerless, and there's absolutely nothing that separates between the pit and the public domain. So as people that dig foundations, they have to dig in order to build walls. Putter, all these examples are exempt from paying damages. Why? Vipnei kein putter, they're exempt anyway. Afal pi she'ein yefshar l'rabim lishamer achar shehu samach l'derech kolkach. Even though that people have no way of avoiding this, or being cognizant of the fact that there might be a pit there, because it's mamish right next to the Rishus HaRabim, she'yafshar l'yishuvar is built yishyasu kolach yisos sabateyam. Of course, in certain construction projects, you have to dig foundations, so you have no choice. So since this activity is a necessary and permitted activity, so the halachos of bor do not govern it.
Now, how exactly do you own a hole in the ground?
I mean, if it's in your property,
well,
you own the dirt.
You own the, you own the dirt. But I thought there was a case before where you're digging your property, and then you are mafkir your property, but you still own the hole. How can you own something? How can you own
Well, you own the area of the hole.
You still owning air rights.
Huh? Well, I mean, there's.
Well, you could. Yeah, I mean, you could own the walls of the pit. You could own. There's dirt there. There's physical substance there. V'din hamagale bor afal pi shelo chafer o shamer zichron al bracha shechayev. It says in the pasuk ki yichre, one is digging. If you open the pit. So even if somebody dug a pit and he covered it as required by halacha, that shouldn't be a mikshol to other people walking. Since somebody else came and took away the covering, then the second person is obligated to pay damages. He is the one who's responsible for the issues arising from this bor.
You take the manhole cover off a manhole.
Exactly. Perfect example. The chiluk adin in haboyin binyan hagiloi lefi kisuyu shalbor b'chalosho v'chizko b'cholsho v'chizko, I'm sorry. So there are differences of halachos that govern the, you say, automatic status of something that covers a bor. The halacha talks about, let's say, it's strong enough to withstand the walking of camels but not oxen. So what happens if? So actually, he quotes here the lashon of the Rambam, so we can get a better understanding. Kigon kisohu bedavar shiachol lamod bifnei shvarim veinu yachol lamod bifnei gimalim. Yeah, that's like I said. So if you covered it with something that could withstand oxen walking on top of it, but not camels, velchol av gimalim venisroea, then camels walked across it and it got damaged. Velchol av shvarim venafluvo, then oxen walked across it and fell in. If it shouldn't be expected that camels walk across this item that you covered your boar with, then you are exempt because it's like an onus. You couldn't possibly be expected to have controlled for that variable. So I guess both are responsible for... Vava Arishon, again, he quotes the again. Even the commentary here has been more explicit regarding what the halacha is than normally. I don't know why all of a sudden they woke up and made our lives easier for this particular mitzvah. Velva Arishon, which says, Velva Arishon Velokiso, Hasheni Velokiso, the first person who owns the boar passed by, or dug the boar passed by, and he didn't cover it, and the second one, and he didn't cover it. Arishon Chayev, Hashimser Delilashen, right? So it's really the first person's responsibility, because the first person who encounters the boar is supposed to make sure that no takala comes out of it. Again, if somebody dug part of the bor, And somebody another dug another part. So a lot of details about this, and a lot of them are can still consider tzveikos, even down to the final halachic literature. So in certain most cases, the person will be patur because we don't know for sure what the halacha is. V'dinei chiyuv sheyesh l'adam b'achakas hanezek, again, exactly how far someone has to go and making sure that no damages come out of his property. Kedosh l'yavo hanezek l'ibnei adam b'meima v'kotsav v'zchuchiyosav. So to make sure that people don't get damaged by, let's say, you have thorns in your property and shards of glass. They would say that even some very holy people used to bury their thorns in the ground and they would discard them, like a few tfachim down into the ground, so that, let's say, if somebody plowed over this area, so the plow wouldn't cause the thorns. This would be, that was farther than was actually halachically required.
Wouldn't you always go back?
What?
You go back, of course.
Thorns.
You might have to
wouldn't grow back. Thorns don't grow back. Thorns are part of a plant. They don't grow back by themselves. So it's explained in the third and fifth prakim in Bava Kama and Bava Basra, which of course are all part of the greater Maseches Nezikin. The Bava Kama, first gate, Bava Metzia, middle gate, and Bava Basra, the final gate, are all part of a huge, gigantic Masechta. Originally, we're part of a huge, gigantic Masechta called Nezikin, but it was so big that they divided it into three parts. 30 chapters, huge. It's like Maseches Kelim. Maseches Kelim that talks about the Tumah and Tahara of different vessels. It's also 30 chapters long. So some Rishonim actually have above a Kam, above Metzi, above a Basra, Maseches Kelim. But there's no Gemara on that, so it's a little bit easier to manage. It wouldn't be, you can still fit it in one volume easily.
There's no Gemara, just Rashi.
Maseches Kelim is up in Taros. It's not applicable nowadays, so there's not Gemara on it. It usually isn't Gemara on things that are not applicable nowadays.
Well, then, what kind of canon is it talk about?
What?
What kind of canon is it talk about, Maseches Kelim? Maseches Kelim.
You're talking about all different kinds of vessels.
Not canon for the Maseches Midos or something.
No. Regular vessels. What?
Midos. What?
Midos. A lot of Maseches talk about various things about the Beis Hamikdash. But Midos mostly, you're right. There's also halacha, by the way, an interesting halacha, that if the bor is only 9 tefachim deep, but the final tefach is water. Mm-hmm. So that's considered to be just as damaging as a 10 tefach deep dry bore. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting to keep in mind. So it's all subject to discretion in various areas. Mm-hmm. Again, this mitzvah is applicable really towards the judges who are supposed to judge according to these laws. Because there are no female judges in Jewish law. But the women, of course, are fully subject to the penalties, whether they got inflicted the damage or they were damaged. They're entitled to the same rights as if it was a man who caused or was the recipient of the damage.